All right, you're on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And John.
Oh, we're not live.
That's sad.
I know it is. Very sad. Well. It is very sad. So we recorded this show last week, of course, as we told everybody that we were going to do, which is actually this week. So it's actually going to be broadcast in the future, which basically makes us fucking time travelers, John.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, this is pretty fantastic. Because we're awesome. All right, so...
No massive rants today.
No massive rants, because I don't know what the hell is going on in the world for the last week.
Well, let's rant
about... We should rant about something.
Okay.
Go for it.
Now, this actually happened today, which was last week. Wrap your mind around that.
All right.
Okay.
Whoa.
So here's a rant from the day that we're recording the show, even though the show's going to be broadcast in the future. Time traveler stuff. Quantum physics right here. Okay. I went out this morning, early this morning, because I had to print off some stuff. This is a rant about just knowing how to do your freaking job, okay?
Okay.
So I went out this morning, which was actually last week. Okay, I think we've established that.
I think we've covered that. Stop confusing me.
All right. So I went out to get a bunch of materials printed for the training that we're going to be doing today, which was actually last week in the future. Oh, my God. All right. So I went out to print this material, right? And I go to the local copy center, and I go in there, and it's like, hey, man, I need to make these copies. And he's like, all right, you go use the self-station. All right, so I go to the self-station, and he's like, yeah, it's the normal price. I'm like, so if I use this station, it's the normal price. If I printed out a master copy, brought it and copied it, you bet. So I swipe my little card, and I go to print. Negative, Ghost Rider. It's like $47 for 120 copies. And I'm like, no, that is a no-go, dude. It should be like... $12. Oh yeah. So well, now of course I've gotten hit for $3.95. I'm like, well, can I get a refund? Well, I don't know how to do that. Okay. So that's I don't know how to do my job part number one. Okay. So then I'm like, all right, how about you just take everything off this USB and you go back in your little computer, because I've used this copy shop before with more competent people working there. And so I say, go in the back, plug this into the computer, and you can print it out here, right? He's like, yes. I'm like, all right, awesome. So we go back there, we go to hook it up, and he can't figure out how to select the appropriate copier. And I'm like, so actually, if you just see that drop down, you just like go there, and then you print that. And he's like, oh, yeah. So he starts printing it, right? So then we go to the part where I need some double-sided copies, and he can't figure out how to do that either. And I'm like, okay, man, so if you do this and you do that, and then you select this option, you know, alongside printing and all this kind of stuff. And he's like, oh, looking super confused. And I go, do you mind if I just slide in here and just do your job for you? And he was like, yeah, that'd be great, man. So I'm like, okay, let me show you. How did you get this job where they leave you here alone? You're here alone. Holy crap. So then we get to the end. I need something else printed. I'm like, hey, man, I yelled to the back. Hey, man, can you print me like 120 copies or whatever more of this? Yeah, so he starts printing it. It's coming out super huge. It takes 4 pages now to make the one thing. It's like 40-something pieces of paper. He totally screws up. And I'm like, hey, man, it's screwed up. You need to stop it. He comes out, oh, man, what happened? I'm like, you are an idiot. That is exactly how this happened.
How have you survived what life is?
What the world is. So anyways, I had to go back and show him how to do his job again. I'm like, this isn't complicated stuff. I'm not like a computer genius. I just use one.
Yep.
And I read also. And so if you read the options available, if you don't know how to do your job, learn. Please.
Or
if you
find a different job that you
if
do
If you don't
know
every in and out of your job, how to do everything that could potentially come. Because when you're standing around at the copy shop, you don't know what else to do. Instead of standing around on your freaking phone playing Angry Birds and checking out chicks on freaking Instagram, what you ought to be doing, like Mason's doing right now, all right? What you ought to be doing is learning new things. Like, for example, how not to screw up the soundboard.
Actually, I'm reading
like
about
that.
The German Armed Forces proficiency badge that I'm about to test for.
Nobody even cares, Mason. And you interrupted my rant. I award you no points.
How many German Armed Forces proficiency badges do you have, Glenn?
The same number that you have right now, which is zero.
But I'm going to have one more than him.
All right. So there's my rant for today.
All right.
Which was actually last week.
Oh, my God. Would you get over it?
All right, so we're going to talk about maintenance today. We don't really have anything else to rant about.
All right.
And we invited Quinn to hang around and talk with us about maintenance.
Hi, from the past slash future.
See?
The past last
Quinn future. Gets it.
I knew we were in a time machine because he talked about Angry Birds, which I don't think was relevant for like the last 4 years. So
yeah.
Oh, whatever. Some of us get
us
stuck
and
on
Doc
things.
Brown have gotten back into DeLorean apparently to go check on that.
So Quinn, of course, from Brethren Armament. You can find him at brethrenarms.com. Find him on Facebook. Find him on Instagram.
Yes, sir.
Check him out. It's a cat paw, not a dog paw, so don't get confused like I did. It's an Irish cat. Hit Google on that. Find more information on the logo.
That's what I'm going to do right now.
All right. That's what there you ought to do. Do something useful, German marksmanship badge. Who cares? All right.
Armed Forces proficiency. Yeah.
Whatever.
It's different. You're talking about the shoots and sneer.
Who cares? All right. So we're going to talk about maintenance. We got Quinn for about half our show today. So we're just going to talk about maintenance with him for a little while. And once he leaves, we'll kind of go on to advertising and talk about why we think that's so ridiculous. So first of all, firearms maintenance. Now, as most of our shows go, this is a show that was requested by one of our listeners. And very specifically, he asked some questions. And the first thing he asked was, how do you do maintenance? What do you guys use? And why and when do you perform maintenance on your firearms? So our idea behind maintenance is this. All right. First of all, I typically, and this is my personal opinion here, I really only do maintenance on firearms that's like slightly preventative, right? Mostly mildly preventative. Like my handguns, for the most part, get clean barrel and all that kind of stuff about every 1,000 rounds. I'll lube them about every 500-600 rounds. With my ARs, about the same. My carry handgun, lube gets checked daily, or if I go and, you know, run it through a hard course of fire or something like that, I check it because I'm going to potentially be betting my life on it, so I want to make sure it's totally functional. But understand that most modern firearms could really run dry if they had to for mm-hmm. the number of rounds you're likely to be firing in a self-defense situation. I'm not saying do that, but I'm saying understand that could potentially happen. Same thing with, like, you know, my go-to daily carbine. It's about the same. I check it every time, you know, I'm going to be employing it or putting it in my truck or something like that to carry it around just to make sure it's operational. You know, long guns, like my long-range rifles, precision rifles, I bore snake to bore every time I'm, you know, done with without shooting. And I clean, like, with solvents and everything in the barrel maybe every few hundred rounds possibly. I keep the bolt grease going, you know, to make sure that I'm getting good solid lockup and consistency with shooting. And I just grease the bolt whenever I pull the bolt out and it looks like it needs some grease, you know. So I'm pretty loose on things like, you know, things like preventative maintenance. So what do you think, John? What's your thing?
Well, my thing used to be that I sat down and, like, spit and polished everything.
Marine Corps!
Yeah. That's who taught me how to take care of guns.
Right.
And then I started working for you, and I was like, I seem to be wasting a lot of time on this because his guns don't seem to be messing up. So I'll follow the Glenn Stilson method. My daily carry gun, I lube about once. I take it apart and clean it about once a week, lube it. Make sure everything's good to go. My carbine, if we get done with a class, I take it home, bore snake it a couple of times, put a little bit of lube on it. That's really about it. And I rarely shoot my bolt gun, so it rarely gets maintained because I think it's got less than 300 rounds through it total so far, and it seems to be working just fine.
So what's your regimen, Quinn?
My regimen, and for all those listening, the important thing to notice for all of this is we are people that live, shit, eat, and sleep guns on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So it is a somewhat tilted perspective. The best thing I can recommend it or equate it to is look at your mechanic's car. Probably looks like crap. He spends all day long cleaning and working on your car. He doesn't want to spend a whole lot of time doing that with his. He knows what limits he can push, so he probably doesn't change his oil every 3,000 miles. He doesn't clean it every day. He doesn't do that stuff because he knows what it's capable of, and he's comfortable with that because he's spent a lot of time with that. Before I got in the firearms industry, obviously from the military, I was used to cleaning everything constantly.
Toothbrushes, Q-tips.
Yep, all the time.
Carburetor cleaner.
If I had a dirty Q-tip after cleaning the underside well of the trigger pack after pull out the AR, it meant it was dirty. Somehow that was going to make it unserviceable when the fight began.
Carbon buildup on the tail of the bolt. No!
As I've gotten, you know, obviously you've gotten a lot more familiar and knowledgeable on the system, I know what I can get away with. So I clean mine when I notice that they're dirty, or if I actually start feeling any sort of, any precursors to reliability issues. But that's because it's a tuned hand. I'm used to shooting these things every single day where the minute I feel any sort of hesitation in movement or something like that, you know what, I probably need to clean it or lube it. For the normal people, I ask you the question, if you have the free time, if you have a plate at home and you eat dinner on it, could you in theory eat dinner off of it the next day without cleaning it? Yeah, probably for another week, probably 4 weeks. You can do it. You know,
I guess that would depend on what you had for dinner.
Yeah, it exactly. It depends on what you had for dinner, how messy you were.
So, for example, if you're having wolf ammo for dinner,
yes,
you should clean your gun more often.
Yes, and I would probably also advise to see a doctor. you're not going to, you know, the best answer is when should you clean it and when should you take care of it every single time you shoot it? You should. in reality, we all get caught up. We've all got regular lives, and that just doesn't become possible. And frankly, some of us get kind of lazy with our own stuff because we have to be so attention to detail oriented with your stuff. So as a manufacturer, we clean our, you know, obviously all the guns get cleaned up after we do test fire before they go out. Mine get cleaned when I feel that they need them. I try to do something somewhat regular, and after a couple hundred rounds in anyone, if I just haven't done it for a while, I'll clean it. A lot of that also has to do with the other part of the conversation of what kind of oil are you using, because depending on those lubrication products, they may need more or less attention as time goes on.
Well, and with most of our students, you know, when they see us performing our field maintenance on our guns before classes or something like that, they'll be like, is that all you use? It's like, yeah, here's my cleaning kit. It's a bore snake, some lube, some cleaner, a toothbrush, and a rag. Like, that's pretty much my cleaning kit. If I need something more than that, I've got my, you know, my little mini armor's kit next to it if I need to fix something or whatnot. But it's like, we just don't, I don't spend that much time. You know, people see me before class sometimes cleaning my handgun, so I know it's going to operate perfectly during demos, and I'll slap that handgun apart, clean it, lube it, slap it back together, 2 minutes, 3 minutes tops. You know what I mean? It's just a real quick kind of process, and they go, wow, is that all I need to do? And it's like, well, yes, it's all you need to do. Now, that being said, and while I would say, you know, to most shooters, I don't know. I don't know if I agree they need to do it every single time they shoot it, but here's where I think that's not a bad idea.
You're not going to do anything wrong other than spend your free time
doing
it.
Yeah, you're just going to waste some time.
Right.
Yeah. But where that might not be a bad idea is, how much does the average recreational shooter shoot?
You're going to the range, how many rounds are you firing?
That's a very
good question.
But I mean,
how messy was your meal? I mean, it's the
But the other
idea.
Question is, yeah, one, number one, how messy is it? But two, when's the next time you're going to shoot this gun again? Because obviously leaving certain types of deposits in your gun is not a good idea. I mean, it can do potentially some erosion or things like that, rust, things like that. Did your gun get wet? Did it get really dirty on the outside? Are you shooting, corrosive ammunition, stuff like that? If I take that gun and then go slap it in the safe, there's a possibility I could end up with some rust, with some, you know, additional problems. So if I'm not going to see this gun for another couple months, like I think the average recreational shooter probably is likely to encounter, it's not a bad idea to clean it after I'm from the range, or after I come home from the range, especially under certain circumstances. You're at the range and it starts raining, don't go stick your wet gun back in your safe. That's a bad idea.
Yeah, dry it off.
But for me, it's like I could do that because I'm going to see that gun again tomorrow. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's not that big of a deal if my gun doesn't get cleaned every time. But I can see where you're coming from there. So things like the products we use. You mentioned
– Yes.
You mentioned on the previous show you were on with us, you know, you kind of ranted against CLP. Ah, CLP sucks. And we joked about you can't
do – It causes cancer
you can't
in
do,
California.
Well, you can't do three things 100%, right? So when you're looking at a product, you have to look at what it's actually doing and where it actually comes from. And you made, you know, before the show, we were talking a little bit, and you made a really good reference to the automotive industry. So I'd like for you to kind of repeat that.
Yeah. So just something to keep in mind before you look at any advertisement or any company for any product that you're going to be putting in there that has to do with lubrication or cleaning. I want you to think about the automotive industry. It's at least 100 times larger than the firearms industry, even if we account for the militaries and things like that. It's a huge group. They have spent 100 times more money and time and expertise on that subject than anything we could ever hope to do. So really, me personally, and this is where my brother and I diverge, he has his own, he does use some firearms-based lubes or products for his stuff. Everything I buy is from the automotive store, everything. Because if you think about even running a full auto gun that shoots 750 rounds a minute, and it was crazy. You know, we were at the Texas Firearms Festival a couple of weeks ago, and we put 10,000 rounds through a gun in 2 days. And that's seen as an atrocious amount. Your car rotates, or your car runs at about, you know, anywhere from 2,000 to 5,000 RPMs. That's revolutions per minute. So let's go ahead and say that's 2,000 to 5,000 rounds per minute. And you drive that to California and back all day long, you don't have a problem. It is 10 times of a more difficult environment. It's obviously much more difficult from an engineering aspect or how well it's going to perform. So the amount of money that they've spent in the automotive industry to make the best products possible is going to be very, very hard to beat with us being the relatively smaller group in the world with having to do anything involving lube. So it's the idea of they've spent a lot more money. They've got way more engineers than we do and a lot more scientists, and they've spent a lot more time in order to optimize those products. So that's one of those I definitely keep an eye on. There might be some stuff that's better in the firearms world, but you have something to compare it to, and that's what we use in the automotive industry.
Well, you have to look, too, at the aspect of what is lube doing in your gun. It is reducing friction between two metal moving parts.
Yes. You
know? Now, some lubes that are a little bit better will also do things like collect carbon and dirt and junk so that it doesn't blow into other parts of your gun and it's easier to maintain afterwards. You know, it wipes off better as opposed to a lube that just kind of runs around in your gun and then collects that same amount of stuff throughout different areas of your gun. One product, for example, that we like, and we have a reason for this that I'll tell briefly, and that'll be Slip 2000.
Yes, you know,
sir. We use Slip 2000. We give it out to all of our students who attend our firearms classes. They all get a sample of it. It's really great stuff, and here's how we kind of came upon it. John and I, several years ago, were reading an article written by Pat Rogers from EAG Tactical, and he talked about Dirty 14 or Filthy 14.
Yeah, Filthy
14. Filthy 14, rack, rifle rack number 14 that they used as one of their training and loaner rifles that at that point had like 65,000 rounds, had never been cleaned. All they did was whenever, you know, every 1,000 rounds or so, they pulled out the bolt carrier group, they wiped everything off, they re-lubed it with Slip 2000, they stuck it back together, and they pressed on. And I thought that that was pretty interesting because they did it under a lot of different conditions, different ammunition, et cetera. And so that really gives you a really good basis to kind of draw from and say, does this product actually work? Mm-hmm. So then we, you and I, John, we bought some Slip 2000.
I still have that bottle. I
still like have the same bottle.
Enormous bottle, dude.
I bought the same bottle. I've still got the same bottle. And we started using it. And then we had a class just a few weeks after that that was literally in a blizzard. We showed up. There was like 4 inches of snow. There was, I think it was like 12 inches of snow by the time we left.
Yeah, the temperature just got over 30.
Oh, man. It was terrible. Yeah, we were single digits for the beginning of the class, double digits for the majority of the class. It was pretty interesting. And we found that people's guns started malfunctioning before lunch. So stinking cold. People were getting covered in snow. Their holsters were getting covered in snow. The guns were getting covered in snow. People's guns started having problems because how cold it was. So and at
running,
lunchtime,
literally running visibly colder. Like you could very distinctly watch the action of the slide.
And one was almost frozen shut.
Yeah.
By the time it came down to actually shoot it.
Well, we had taken a break. We had taken a break and their gun froze shut.
Yeah, and their gun basically froze. And so then when they started firing it, of course, it that, like, you know, that process of firing will heat things up a little bit, but you could watch the action moving. So at lunchtime, we pulled them out. We stripped them down with the Slip 2000 725 cleaner. We lubed it up with their EWL, and no more problems.
None.
So for me, that's an obvious indicator that the product works, mm-hmm. right? Now, some of the recent issues with other products have been that people just won't admit where their products are actually coming from. And as you said already, Quinn, a lot of it comes from the automotive industry. And recently we have the whole FireClean debacle, right? Where we've got some well-known guys saying FireClean is the best stuff in the whole wide world. They've been caught kind of cheating their tests where they were shooting one type of ammunition with the FireClean, a nice clean ammunition. Then they were firing a dirty type of ammunition with the other products. They were doing things to what was the one test that they did that they were trying to show something specific about FireClean. I can't remember what it was now. And they were trying to show how much it like propels out the barrel or something like that. I'm trying to remember.
The conversation was even with using the different ammo for the testing on there, that FireClean actually still produced more smoke than the other products that they did.
That's what it was.
And Larry Vickers had actually said that smoke is actually the carbon being displaced from the firearm, so the little carbon farriers are actually picking it up and carrying out of your gun so you don't have to clean it. And because that's the misunderstanding or not knowing that smoke is the byproduct of an incomplete combustion operation, uh-huh. which has absolutely nothing to do with the product. It has nothing to do with what they're – I mean, that was just a bold-faced – I wouldn't even say it's a lie because he didn't even know what he was talking about.
It's not a lie. It's just an uneducated –
No, it. I mean, that's statement. Me saying that Rambos are from Mars. I mean, it has that, but.
But they caught it on a slow oh, yeah. camera.
Rambos aren't from Mars.
And they used shut up, and then they used a slow mo camera, and then they used a dirtier powder in the ammunition to create more smoke.
Yeah,
in their FireClean firing process than in the other firing processes.
See, that seems like an awful lot of work.
More smoke. Well, actually, it's not an awful lot of work when you're trying to sell stuff to people.
The way it actually worked was they were using, I think they were using like Corban DBX, which has a very clean burning powder. They were using that in the fire clean guns.
Right.
Because they were hoping that it would produce less smoke than the conventional ones that they were using dry in with CLP.
Okay, that was it, yeah.
And it still produced more smoke, even those other ones, because fire clean, from what it's derived from, has a lower smoking temperature than all those other products.
And of course, what is it derived from, Quinn?
It is derived, without getting into specifics, sure, only because I did not personally do the infrared spectroscopy exam on there. It is a vegetable-based biodegradable oil.
And Andrew down at Verwappen Blog, which you haven't checked out, Verwappen Blog, and you want really great cynical reviews on things, that is the man to check out. That guy, and you know, in Andrew's defense, so I do enjoy his blog because he's very factually based. He really doesn't care who he pisses off.
No.
He just gives the facts. So if you've never checked out Verwappen Blog, V-U-U-R-W-A-P-E-N, if I remember correctly, check it out. He's got a lot of great reviews on there, everything yeah. from firearms maintenance to flash hiders to all kinds of stuff, and he's got a great sense of humor, so you got to check that out. But on in his blog, he's here locally in Arizona. He took it over to the university and had them run like chemistry tests. This is legitimate. Like, he didn't do this in his garage. He had chemists running tests on this product, and it is vegetable oil, essentially.
It's not a derivative of vegetable oil. It is absolutely vegetable yeah. oil. The question is what specific one? People are asking, is it actually canola oil? Right. And that wasn't immediately conclusive because there's a few carbon molecules that are floating around in different places, and it gets into a very difficult conversation about right. organic chemistry and how that can be the same
now, thing. Now, is there anything wrong with using fire clean your gun?
I'm not even going to say fire clean. Is there anything wrong with using vegetable oil in your gun?
Okay, vegetable oil.
We've been using vegetable oil. Vegetable oil has been used as a firearms lubricant for 200 years. I mean, there's going back to Rogers Rangers and things like that, there's still discussions about using tallow and animal fats and stuff like that. That's where, before oil was actually found in the early 1900s, late 1800s, that was the only oil that we had, was something that came out of a vegetable or something that came out of an animal.
Rub some fat on it. Yep. You'll be all right.
So we've been using that for years, and it's fine. The issue that you run into, and this is something you'll see in a bunch of the other companies that'll mm-hmm. say that, is they say, hey, it's biodegradable, and that's used as a sales point. Mm-hmm. And for some people, if you're going to be cleaning it at your house and your kids are around, I can understand that being important. But in the lubrication world, that is a bad thing, because what's the second part of biodegradable? Degradable.
Right.
Anything organic, with the exception of honey, for whatever reason, you can eat 10,000-year-old honey and you're fine. Everything else that is organic or from an animal, plant, whatever, breaks down. Mm. So anything that you're going to put in your gun that's biodegradable over time is going to break down and not work.
And potentially we're going to increase that time or decrease that time because we're going to expose this thing to yep. extreme heats and extreme cold and extreme friction.
So it would break down on its own. Now we're going to be putting it through massive temperature changes and pressure and all this other stuff that actually will further the breakdown. It's the idea of your motor oil sitting on the shelf will never break down. You put it in your car, you get 3 to 5 to 7,000 miles depending on what you're doing. That's what it's designed for. You do not see a single car that is designed to run off vegetable oil. Now, they do actually, even at the University of Arizona, they've been working on doing it in the machine shop, is actually swapping over all of their machines to run on coconut oil, mm. which, again, it works great. It's one of those things you have to clean out regularly. And when they do that, it's better for the environment, and it's cheaper than for some of the other stuff they're using. But there's a specific purpose. It is not, this is the absolute best there is. It's, this is the best for what we're using.
Well, people are confusing biodegradable with green, right?
Yes.
So like Slip 2000 as an example, or Frog Lube, even another popular lube out there, right? Not yep. my favorite or my preferred one, but certainly a green product. And they often show how green Frog Lube is because their sales reps and aficionados
it does taste delicious.
And it is minty.
It is very
And they will
minty.
Eat it and they will say, see, this is a green product. But a green product and a biodegradable product are two different things. A green product means I'm not going to get cancer because I used Hoppus number 9 growing up, you know what I mean? Or I'm not going to get a carcinogen from yep. Slip 2000 or Frog Lube. It doesn't necessarily mean it's biodegradable. If I pour it on the earth, it's not good for it.
Technically, yellow cake uranium is both gluten-free and organic.
So, true.
So there you go.
According to that, that is perfectly okay. Does that mean it's not hazardous?
It's a green
Absolutely
product.
Not.
Should eat it.
And again, this is what we talked about in the last episode of using those buzzwords, which we talk about how ridiculous it is in the food world, where everyone gets worried about Monsanto and bioengineering and all this other stuff, but then we're relying on some of that same malarkey here, and we're using that to sell products. I know specifically where FireClean was originally designed, or not FireClean, but Frog Lube was originally designed as a lubrication in the food manufacturing process. Mm-hmm. And for that, it had a very good purpose that if it leaked, it didn't cause contamination. People didn't die from eating it. That is great for what they need it for, and it does work okay in firearms, but does that mean it's the best because of that? No.
We've actually had a number of failures with Frog Lube in our guns. Today's show brought to you by Frog Lube.
I need to pull up the recipe for the Frog
Lube. I'm not a Frog Lube fan.
The Frog Lube use pancake, it on crusade actually, weapons. Which is a recipe that we have from one of the guys that runs our guns at a range.
Nice.
It looked like someone had melted an entire candle and stuck it in there. Mm-hmm. We actually were pulling out 2 to 3 inch long mm-hmm. slivers of just carbon and mm-hmm. and Frog Lube.
We've had the Frog Lube coagulate and harden, especially in the cold. It gets crusty, it gets chunky, it blows back. We pulled Frog Lube out of buffer tubes. We've pulled Frog Lube out of all crazy types of parts of the gun, especially for those guys who are a little bit heavier on the lube. That stuff is going to blow out, and it is going to go somewhere, and sometimes it's not going to blow out into the gun and go down the barrel and exit with the bullet, or you know, blow out the ejection port. It's going to blow into other parts of the gun. We've had to help people clean a candle like wax out of their fire control group with Frog Lube stuff. I'm just not a fan of it.
The last point I'll have on lubrication, and then I'll have to leave you guys to the rest of it, is just like we were talking about, temperature is a key portion of any of those, just as it is in the automotive industry. You've got different weights of oils for different cars that have different things. But the other thing is, guys, back in, 20 years ago, we were used to doing it with the older cars, is you had oil that you ran in the winter and oil that you ran in the summer. Because mm-hmm. you needed something that was thicker in the heat so it didn't break down, so you mm-hmm. kept everything lubricated, but that stuff will then cause performance issues, and it can weigh the engine down here. If you're going to be going from Arizona in the summer and then you're going to be training up in northern Montana in the winter, very, very few, if any, products are going to work perfectly in both environments. Mm-hmm. So this is one of those we have to pay more attention and not just accept a single solution for everything and go, this will work. And it doesn't work that way anywhere else. It's not going to work in the gun world. Mm. I look at that. If you're going to buy any of the firearms related products, look if they actually have anything in there about what their temperature envelope's for. That alone will pay a lot of dividends in terms of weeding out the snake oil sellers and the ones that are actually honest about what they've been doing and spent some critical thinking tasks on there. If they don't talk about what conditions they're being used in, the temperatures and things like that, then it's not going to work. You know, the first thing you could ask them is, what is the, you're used to seeing in motor oil where it says 10W30 or SAE30, those numbers do have a purpose. It has to do with the viscosity or how resisting to forces it's a whole fluid thing and I don't want to overly nerd out on, but it's that basic idea of it's some's thicker than others, and that would be the first thing I'd ask any gun oil manufacturer out there: what viscosity is your oil? If they don't know, man, what are you using this for? What is my intended purpose? What temperature am I using this for? If these are questions that can't be answered, or it's not stuff that's readily available on their website or other publications, you've got to start asking: is it actually valid? You know, even the best guys, if it's all being made by the same oil company, oil only comes from a few places in the world, and it's got to go from there to whoever's going to make that specific formulation, and they might repackage it and send it to AutoZone, or they might repackage it and send it out to the firearms world, and there's nothing wrong with that, and it's okay to pay a little bit more because they're not buying 50,000 gallons of it. They're not bringing a gallon of it to be able to put in your range bag. They're going to have to get something small for packaging, and there's some other stuff. So there's going to be a bit of a different price, but those guys that went and did their research and found a good product that they are going to bring to the firearms world are going to have that information. Whereas if the main thing that they tell you is the SEALs use it, then I'm going to immediately start questioning what the validity is, because especially from the military, even the stuff that got brought up in FireClean was the guys were stuck. They were in the moon dust that we've seen in Afghanistan and in Iraq, and anything better than CLP, anything is better than CLP. I'll leave you guys to rant on that one. Was it working? Was it a major improvement? Yes. Is it a real improvement by modern standards or because you were hamstrung by the department or agency you work with? Probably not. So it's just the idea of think critically, do your research and find out what it is. Firsthand account from reputable sources like these guys that don't get money from FireClean to do advertisements, but they've got the ability to test it. that's something that I would take over the blank uses it. Mm-hmm. You know, if someone could actually tell you, I've run it in this situation under these conditions, and these are the problems that I had.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Cool. And with that rant, Quinn leaves.
Have a good one, guys.
I'm out.
Drop the mic.
Thanks for coming.
Say hi to the future for me. And,
in the future.
Watch out for the hoverboards.
In the future.
So Quinn
of the
is
past.
Now leaving, which was actually last week.
So he is quite literally time traveling right now.
All right. So make sure you guys check out Brethren Armament. Obviously, these guys know their stuff. You know, they know a lot about engineering. They know a lot about what they do. So brethrenarms.com. Check them out on Facebook. Check them out on Instagram. Quinn, again, thanks for coming, man.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, guys. So I did fail to mention at the beginning of the show. I got to go back.
Oh, God.
Just a few minutes. Or not a huge time travel, just
so
a couple of minutes here.
So we're going back in time for the future of the past?
Just for a couple, yes.
Okay.
Exactly. So we got to mention that we are in the Cowtown studio, brought to you by our good friends over at Cowtown Range. Keep an eye on their website, because Cowtown Range is actually going to be changing their website a lot here in about a month, a little less than a month. Whole new revamp, lots of great info coming, lots of cool information. Also, our show is brought to you by AR500 Armor.
Yeah.
Check them out over at AR500Armor.com. Take a look at their new Slick Micro Carrier.
Mm-hmm.
The new Slick Micro Carrier is awesome. You know, I've got one of the older micro carriers, and big fan of the new Slick ones. Of course, Tyler showed us the new one here when you were in the show last week, or 2 weeks ago,
because
we're in
the
future,
past,
in the past.
The future of the past.
And, so it was a really, really cool carrier. Make sure you check that out. They've also got an 11x14 size coming up for people who want they want the same design of micro carrier, but they want something that's a little bit larger other than an 8x10. So very cool.
All right.
So back to the maintenance stuff. Other products that I use that I like a lot, I keep things really simple. I've got my old rag, I've got an old toothbrush, and mm-hmm. I've got my boar snake.
Yep.
You know, I do keep a rod and traditional brushes and patches and stuff like that handy, just simply because I might need to knock out a barrel obstruction. There are times where, you know, scrubbing the boar is going to be appropriate when certain buildups or
use a drill for that.
Junk drills are good for that under certain circumstances. but boar snakes are awesome. I don't know who created a boar snake, but they deserve freaking Nobel Peace Prize. All right. Now, where boar snakes will screw you is if you drop them in the Adam, you are just dying over there. I have said rod, boar snake, and lube so many times that Adam can barely stay conscious over there from the laughing. All right. Keep it together, Adam. So where the boar snake won't work properly, how's that for you? All right. Is if you drop it in the dirt.
Yeah, don't get your boar snake dirty. And if you do, clean it.
Dirty from like carbon and normal gun junk is fine. But if you get dirt, sand, things like that in it, it's where guys in the military have had really bad experiences with boar snakes, because they'll drop them in the sand, they'll have them on their kit gets full of sand and everything. Then they'll go to pull them down the barrel, and they'll do one
like
or two things.
Like sandpaper.
They'll either sandblast the inside basically of their barrel, or they'll get it stuck.
Yeah.
And then once it's stuck, there's really only way to get it out, and it's most of the time you're replacing the barrel. So be aware of that.
I wash my boar snake about once a year anyway.
Yeah, and they're easy
to
wash.
I just rinse it out. A little bit of hot water, a little bit of dish soap, let it dry out fully, and then toss it back in its bag, and it keeps working.
Now, an interesting study that was done, and I always look at studies that are done not on a range and not just from a scientific standpoint, like we tested in a closed environment, we tested 200,000 rounds to this gun and it ran like this and all that. Because a lot of those tests are set up so that they will absolutely
set up for success.
They're going to set up for success. They're going to set up for the maximum amount of success before any
failure.
Well,
you also have to look at who does the study on any of this stuff.
And you also have to keep in mind that everything's going to fail.
Yeah.
Every lube's going to fail at some point. Every gun's going to break down at some point. Every part on your gun is going to break at some point. And there is no gun that will last forever. There is no gun that will never fail. If there was, I would own it.
Yeah.
Right? I don't care what the price would be. I'd figure out a way to pay for it. Every ammunition is going to let you down at some point. Every gun's going to fail you. Every lube's going to fail you. Every piece of gear has a threshold which is going to break, right? So keep that in mind. And one of the great studies that I enjoyed reading about, and it's because it was done in a little bit more of a real-world environment, and it was over at Battlefield Vegas. And the Firearm Blog, and if you haven't checked that out, firearmblog.com is a cool place. They have an article on there just written back in, I think it was September. And if you want to search it, we'll post the link up on our show Facebook page later. But if you want to search it, it's AR Endurance Findings at a Rental Range. So you can go to the Firearm Blog and look that up. But we don't have time to go through the entire thing, because it's a pretty big report. But essentially what the Firearm blog looked at from this report from Battlefield Las Vegas. And Battlefield Las Vegas is this range where you cannot bring personal firearms in. You only rent their guns and you shoot their ammo. And they don't use reloads. They only use factory ammo. I mean, it's a big deal. It's a very well-run, very cool place. People can come in. They can shoot guns from all over the world. They can shoot full auto. They got a minigun there. They've got everything you could possibly want to shoot. It's a very cool little opportunity. And based on that, they said they shoot about 400,000 rounds a month.
Ooh.
That they put through that
or place. That are put through their guns?
Through their guns.
Okay.
On average, like most of their ARs, because they talk a lot about ARs in this article, most of their ARs go about 200,000 rounds before being rotated out. Now, during that time, just about everything breaks down. Just about everything gets replaced. Bolts get replaced. They're about 20,000 rounds. Barrels get rotated out. Gas tubes.
So they basically rebuild a gun.
Yeah, they're essentially and they just keep going until the receiver fails. Now, what was interesting about this is they actually compared the ARs to the AKs, and this is kind of a sidetrack. But the AKs typically start completely failing around about 100,000 rounds, because what happens is the receivers crack.
Yeah.
And they can TIG weld them back together, but that obviously is a weak fix, and eventually it will continue to crack.
The trunnions aren't the thing that cracks the most?
That's only when John Pinnock steps on them. That's the only time that your trunnions
crack. You're welcome.
But it's interesting that they found the AKs actually had a lower threshold for overall rounds through the gun than ARs. You know,
and that is particularly surprising considering the condition of those of AKs that I've seen.
But you also have to consider that they go through these guns on a regular maintenance schedule. I mean, they really, really, really take good care of these guns.
Yeah.
You know, they have them on a very specific schedule. AKs, for the most part, the way the receivers are made, probably not quite as tough as the majority of ARs out there. And so I can understand how an AR receiver would last longer than an AK receiver. And how many people out there are going to put 200,000 rounds to their gun? I mean,
eventually, I'll get there.
Eventually, probably, but I mean, you look at like my daily carry handgun. I've got a Ruger SR9, and it shocks everybody. All right, but I shoot very well with this gun. It's incredibly accurate. I outshoot most people I shoot with, and this thing has over 35,000 rounds through it. I stopped counting at 35,000. Replaced the barrel at 24,000 because it started to affect my accuracy. It's a really great piece of equipment. So, even with as much as I shoot, which is a lot, I shoot a lot. I've had this gun since they first came out, and I've only put, at this point, probably, over 35,000 because I stopped counting at 35. I'm probably closing in on 40,000 easily right by now, and maybe even a little bit more than that realistically. And I shoot a ton. So yeah. The average shooter is rarely ever going to meet that level of shooting. If you're competitive, if you're military agency, you're an instructor, you just shoot a lot, then you obviously can get to that high level of rounds. But the average recreational shooter, I mean, I think that when the NSSF, National Shooting Sports Foundation, did a interview, what do they call it, like a
survey?
Survey, thanks, man. When they do a survey not too long ago about how many rounds the average shooter shoots, it was less than 500 rounds a year.
We do that in a day.
You know, yeah, I mean, for us to do
that
on
a regular basis, we do that in a day.
It's not that uncommon for us to put, and we're not always shooting our daily carry handguns, obviously,
yeah,
so otherwise they'd have a lot more rounds. But it's not uncommon for us to bust through 300 to 500 rounds a day easily.
Yeah.
And they're talking the average recreational shooter only shoots 500 rounds a month or a year, excuse me. So even
so
if they
where's all
for
the
20
ammo?
Years, that's only 10,000 rounds.
Where's all the ammo?
It's sitting in some freaking neckbeard's closet, all the 22 long rifle is.
Okay, all right. Little sidetrack. I was just curious. That's all they shoot. They should just stop buying it.
Stop. Well, but again, that all goes back to the thing, you know, of not panicking when these things happen, because
which we talked about on last week's show, which was actually this week,
which
because
is actually
it's the past
earlier
and the future.
This morning. All right, but it's really kind of a pain in the ass when you're talking to people about, look, you don't need.
How many rounds have you shot through your used gun?
Yeah, you don't need a ton of ammunition stored up because, I mean, what's the reason? But then I need enough 22 or I need enough 9 or I need enough 223 to lash me in case the zombie apocalypse. And it's like, well, how many rounds do you shoot right now? And even if you quadrupled how many rounds you shoot in an emergency, which is a huge increase, would you run out of ammunition before ammunition just became kind of a moot point?
No.
You know what I mean? If you had 10,000 rounds, if you had 5,000 rounds, I mean, most people barely go through a brick of 22 a year is what the NSSF found. And most of our listeners are not your typical shooters. They do shoot through a lot. I went through a brick and a half of 22 on Friday when I took my family out shooting. So, you know, but I got a lot of guns and a lot of people firing guns. But
so you have all the
22. The average person isn't going to shoot through that much ammo. So do they really need to concern themselves with a firearm lubricant product or firearm maintenance product that's going to help them, you know, expand the life of their firearm to 100,000, 200,000 rounds? Probably not.
No.
Now, an interesting thing that these guys found, and they named several different lubes that they used that were a no-go.
Really?
And what they found was actually Slip 2000 is what they primarily use on all their heavy guns, all their belt feds and everything.
It's
and
like it was developed for the Mod Deucer.
It was indeed.
I don't know.
It was indeed.
I don't
indeed.
Know. Maybe they knew what they were doing when they put that one together.
And so they did a really good, you know, they did a great job. And so they still use that. And they said in this, written back in September, they said up until a few weeks ago, they were using Slip 2000 on everything else, except for the minigun, which of course has its own special lubricant because it's got an entirely different set of moving parts. Mm-hmm. But they actually switched over to the Lucas gun products.
Ooh.
Now, of course, as Quinn was talking about, automotive stuff is kind of where the lubrication ideas come from because your vehicle is going to go, as he said, you know, 2,000 to 5,000, you know, revolutions per minute, or we could say
tiny controlled explosions.
Yeah, a bunch of tiny controlled explosions, several thousands of times every minute. And how often do you drive your car? How many hours are you in your car? And if that's 3,000 miles, I mean, gosh, you start doing the math on that. Let's say you go. Say you go 3,000 to 5,000 miles before you change your oil. That oil has been being recirculated through your engine at 5,000 miles, or we'll even go manufacturer recommended, right? 3,000 miles, and let's say you're even going 60 miles an hour. I mean, you start doing the math on how many revolutions your engine's been through. It's a lot.
I cannot count.
That is a
unfathomable.
Ton. That is a ton. And yet that oil, even when you pull it out, literally you could pull the oil out of your car after 3,000 to 5,000 miles, put it in your gun, and it would still be a perfectly good lubricant.
You actually run it through a really good filter and put it back in your car. And
that's also true.
Because guess what? Oil never goes bad.
And it doesn't biodegrade.
Nope.
So now you can burn it, and that will start to kill it. You know, if you have problems in your engine and it's starting to burn your oil, that becomes an
issue.
Unless
you're just burning it off.
It's
we don't need this anymore. We're going to burn some of this.
And so there for a while, I did some experimentations. Really, before we changed to Slip 2000, I was doing some experimentations on my guns and lubricants.
Mm-hmm.
And I was using oil,
mm-hmm.
and I was using ATF.
I used ATF for a long time.
I used ATF for a while, and I'll tell you, it worked just fine. As a lubricant, it worked just fine. Where I had problems with it, cold weather.
Yeah.
Really cold weather. Didn't like that so much. And it was dirtier. It just blew more crap out into, you know, out of the ejection port. It just made the gun kind of dirtier, but it worked just fine. And in a bad situation, you know, I keep more motor oil on hand all the time. It's always in my truck. It's always at my house. ATF, the same thing. I've got cans of that kind of stuff. I mean, dude, in a jiff, you want to talk about storing up for the apocalypse. There's nothing wrong with using ATF or 5W30 for a good weapons lube. So I think mostly with weapons maintenance, people are overthinking it.
Yes.
You know, growing up, our hunting rifles, you know, shotguns, mostly we didn't really have a lot of modern type firearms, so to speak. You know, we were very traditional firearms people. And so growing up, it was, you know, we went out, we shot our rifles. We never cleaned our rifles before we hunted because, you know, my dad knew better than that. Most hunters do, and that kind of screws them on accuracy, but that's another topic. But we use the old rod sections. We would put some, you know, cleaner in the barrel with a wet patch. Then we'd run the bore brush through, pull the bore brush out at the muzzle so you don't pull it back through and pull all the crap back into the chamber again. Put the patch on and run patches until it's clean.
Yep.
You know, and when it's clean or mostly clean, you're satisfied with how clean the patches are coming out. You lube all the moving parts and you put the gun back together.
Problem solved.
It took a while, though.
A really long process.
It took a long time for us to maintain our guns. And it took a lot of, you know, harsh chemicals. We were using hops number 9 and things like that. That's not exactly.
Smell CLP. Takes me back, man.
Yeah, it does. Hops number 9 cologne, dude. I'm telling you what, if they came out with it, every gun guy in the world
Nobody would wear it.
Oh, I would wear it.
Would you?
Married for 13 years, dude.
Yeah, but I think she might make you not wear that. Anyway. I know your significant other. She may be like.
That stinks. You stink.
You smell bad. Go away.
I think that, you know, like my dad growing up, he was big into CLP because that's pretty much what he used, you know, in his era of military service. And so there's so be it, man. You know, but that, as you know, as Quinn pointed out earlier, that's not the best product. But it was better than some of the other stuff that was available. And so when you're looking at your products, don't get all befuddled. Look, if they have fancy advertising, they're probably lying to you. That's always the way I look at it. You know, when people are using ammunition to blow up watermelons, I don't give a crap about how your ammunition does against watermelons. You know, we were just having this conversation with an elderly woman really the other day, who's probably 70-something, bought into the idea of a Taurus Judge because she saw the commercial where they fire the Winchester PDX-1 ammunition. It's got those three little discs and a little, I don't know, half a dozen or so, some size of buckshot, and looks like BB-sized shot or something like that, but some form of it. And they fired it 10 feet at a watermelon, and it blows up the watermelon. So she thinks, of course, excuse me, in her head,
it'll blow up somebody's head.
Oh, my gosh. Think of the damage that'll do.
That's amazing.
First of all, she shows up and shoots the gun. She hates it. It's not fun to shoot. Right?
It's not.
410, that 410 ammo is expensive, so it's not mm-hmm. that fun to train with because it's mm-hmm. super expensive. And when you shoot it beyond 10 feet, of course.
You're lucky to hit a barn.
It doesn't have the same pattern because you're firing a shotgun shell out of no choke and a really, really short barrel at distance. It doesn't work. You're going to end up with collateral damage. So up close and personal, where most people are going to be, is it a good choice? Sure. Is it the gun I would use? No. I would always rather have something than nothing, so I'd take it if nothing was the other option. But the point is, she bought into the marketing hype of, oh my gosh, look at that watermelon explode. Look, anytime they're using that kind of information to sell you stuff, it's because if they use it in the real way, they know what the results are going to be. Mm-hmm. And we've tested a lot of gear for a lot of companies over the years. And, you know, a lot of people like the way we test stuff because we're very realistic about the way we test things.
Well, and we to a certain degree we are. And then we just reach the point of abuse.
We reach the point where we're like, okay.
Once we've gone through some reasonable testing, you know what? Let's crank this up a notch. Let's really abuse this.
It's time to just destroy this. So when you're looking, especially with maintenance products, and are making all kinds of claims of how it keeps your gun cleaner and it starts to bond to the metal inside and it does all these whiz-bang things, and they're not talking about how long it's going to keep your gun operational for or under what conditions it's going to keep your gun operational for, the things that you should actually be concerned about, you know, I can wear nitrile gloves, man. If the product is slightly toxic but it's going to keep my gun running longer and better under more conditions, I'll use that. Green is a great buzzword. Biodegradable is a great buzzword, as we talked about earlier. But it's nothing if it's not actually doing anything for my gun and for my performance, then I don't really care.
Yeah.
And mostly you'll find these results in the field. And the number one issue we have with guns in our classes is what, John?
Under lubrication.
Under lube. And poor maintenance.
Maintenance-related issues in general, but...
And most people, they start blaming ammo, they start blaming gun, they start blaming technique, they start blaming the weather, all this kind of stuff. And it's usually their gun.
Yeah, because when we take it apart, we're like, whoa, what haven't you done here?
If I had the time in every class.
I'm scraping things out of this gun.
Well, and if we had the time in every class, and sometimes we do, but most often we don't, I would have everybody field strip their guns mm-hmm. and go through a quick firearms maintenance deal. Because even the cops and military and all these, and I'm saying it's the only way.
No, but...
But it's a quick field fix that will get the gun back up and running, you know, and at least it eliminates that variable of, okay, if something goes wrong, it's not the maintenance issue. Now mm-hmm. it is technique. It's a
product. Now we're actually looking at a legitimate issue.
Whatever. So most of the time when we have guys, and they might be Mil, Leo, or students, I should say, Mil, Leo, competition shooters, civilian recreational shooters, whatever, hunters, they grew up around guns their whole life, and they start coming into a class where they're shooting a little bit higher volume, they're shooting in the dust, they're shooting in the dirt, they're shooting in the rain, all those different kinds of environments we train in, and their gun starts to fail, and it's because of lack of maintenance. You're like, this is the easiest fix ever, and they go, well, that's, you know, I learned in such and such place that this is how I have to do it. It's like, well, you're doing it wrong, you know? Dry lubes, you know, I know a lot of people who are big into the new dry lubes. I've seen them work on a limited basis.
They have their place.
You know, a very limited bit. When you start to get the high heat and high volume and dirt and stuff like that, game over, man. That stuff starts to fail. We know, not because we're scientists, but because we see it in the field. We see this stuff not work. You know, so for us, maintenance is an important aspect, but you got to do maintenance reasonably. Now, that being said, I know people who clean for Zen.
I do occasionally, about every 6 months, depending on how That's much I've been I shooting and what I've been shooting. I'll sit down and I'll get my little brass scraper kits out. And I just put on some music, lock my kids out of the garage, leave them in the house with mom, and I just...
open up that bottle of hops number 9.
Get high.
If you follow any kind of Buddhist philosophy, there's a lot of different types of meditation that you can do, and it's not... When people say they meditate, it doesn't mean you like sit down and don't do anything at all. Working meditation is typically used in Zen Buddhism, and that's kind of what I go with. Doing something that I don't have to think about and doing it repeatedly all the time, like that's a form of meditation, you know? So cleaning weapons for me is a calming thing.
So really think about what is the purpose of your maintenance, because some people, you know, they are going to clean for meditative purposes, and that's fine. You know, for some people, that's what they do. I don't. I've never enjoyed cleaning guns, ever. I hose things down with a bunch of carb cleaner, get all the crap out of there. I clean where it's necessary. There's certain guns I know I got to clean more, like my semi-auto 22s. You always got to clean those things more because they're super dirty. Some of my foreign weapons, you know, I got to clean more because they get super dirty. But it's like, man, I hose stuff down. I slap it back together. I lube it up. I mean, sometimes if I'm in a hurry, I'll clean. We'll come home from a class where we've got a bunch of carbines that are being used and rented out and everything. I'll have 5 or 6 guns to clean. I'm done in like 30 minutes. I mean, I just blast through things as fast as possible because I don't really enjoy doing it. But another aspect of maintenance that people kind of forget that they need to be looking at is I'm also looking for breakage on parts. I'm looking for things that are coming loose. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for, you know, screws that are backing out. I'm
like all your widgets that are falling off. Attached to your forehead, because that stuff never falls off. Never falls off in the middle of a class.
Yeah, it only falls off every class. So, you know, look for those kinds of things during maintenance as well. Some people love to keep their guns looking super clean on the outside, so they want to take a toothbrush and a Q-tip. And I don't really care about that.
I clean the rust off of my handgun from where it rests up against my body.
Yeah, I mean, that's an important thing, because I don't want it to start to affect, you know, the metal. But even then, a little bit of surface rust isn't going to compromise the capability of your firearm. So,
I like to clean it off.
But I agree.
Then it starts to get scratchy and it itches. And
I agree. I definitely clean that a little bit more. Yeah. But, I mean, what else do you think about maintenance, John? I mean, what else are we not covering here?
I don't think we've missed anything. I mean, it's just maintenance is not complicated. Read your manual, because if there's something specific that your gun needs or requires, like a specific type of lube or a specific lubrication point, you're going to find that in your manual. You're not going to find that anywhere else. Mm. So read your maintenance manuals. Read up on your products. Do some research on your products before you buy them. And don't buy stuff that requires a bunch of specialized crap to keep it running. Like if you're buying a gun and then you have to go buy 3 different types of lube, 2 different types of brushes, you have to buy this thing, this widget, and that gizmo, you should probably look at buying another gun unless that gun fills a very specific niche in your life.
Well, and that's, you know, it's kind of the interesting thing about maintenance is we can sum up maintenance really quick by saying you need to properly maintain your firearms according to the user manual.
Yeah.
Right? Whatever the user manual says you should do, you should definitely do that, because that's going to keep your firearm operational.
Yeah.
You can also sum it up by saying you need just a few simple products. Keep your gun well lubed.
Yep.
Make sure you clean it, you know, clean out the inside from time to time. Clean the parts that are going to be making contact with each other the most.
Yep. Don't oil your triggers.
Don't oil any kind of fire control groups unless it requires it, because there are a few guns that, again, if you read the manual, it will say from time to time you need to put some lithium grease or a drop of oil or whatever on a certain part of the trigger. Geisley's, for example, a lot of Geisley triggers will recommend, you know, a certain, I think, dab of lithium grease or whatever at a certain, very certain point on the trigger after so much usage. And so there's definitely some of those maintenance considerations that you have to make. And on that note, I highly recommend keeping a maintenance book. Yeah. If anyone wants a maintenance book, I'll send you ours for free. And it's just a printout. It's just a PDF file. But all it is just it's the one we use for our precision rifles. It's the one we pass out to our students when they want one. And, you know, if you email us, I'll send you the PDF file and you can print it out for free. But it's, you know, email us info@trainingaz.com. I'll send it to you. You can print it out and you will have a little maintenance record. And so it's a good idea to have a maintenance record.
Yeah.
Because different things you do during maintenance can affect your gun, especially when you're looking at accuracy and consistency and just kind of overall reliability of the gun. You switch lubes, you need to make a note of that. when did this happen? How many rounds? Because all of a sudden you're shooting and your gun starts having problems and you're trying to figure out what the issue is, and the issue might be the loop. You know, you're shooting your hunting rifle, your long range, you know, precision rifle or whatever, and you start to have problems. Oh my gosh, why is my accuracy all over the place? Different maintenance procedures and different types of maintenance products you're using could be having an effect on that. So putting those kinds of things in your maintenance log is definitely important. And, you know, again, keep some kind of maintenance log. It can be a simple, you know, notebook, or it can be one of our logs, or you can even buy very awesome professionally made firearms maintenance logs if you'd like. But keep maintenance simple. If you want a Zen clean, go for it. Every now and then I will get in the mood to go all basic training on my gun, and I will take an AR-15 and I will get a bucket of hot soapy water, and I will take all the parts apart. Everything that comes loose, I will take apart. I will put it all in the bucket of hot soapy water. I will scrub it down old school. I will hit it with all the degreaser. I will take it, you know, clean it all up,
yeah,
and then I'll put it back together and function check it and kind of practice my armor type stuff a little bit. And that's maybe like once every 2 years of my life that I really have that strong, passionate desire. You know what I mean? I mean, and I don't even know what brings it on, you know, a freaking nightmare or something. I don't know. But it's just, that's not something I enjoy doing. Some people totally dig that.
Yep.
And if you dig it, then you go right on ahead and you do it. But do it understanding that it's not necessary. Every time you go to the range, you don't need to clean your gun. It's just not necessary, you know. But like Quinn said, you can eat off the same plate for a long time. You can eat off it for days,
I do my dishes
weeks.
Every night.
I mean, you can take your gun like a dinner plate, right? And I can just wipe it off. If I just wipe off my dinner plate, I could use it again for the next who knows how many meals before it became an actual issue, right?
Yeah.
I can do the same thing with my gun. I can pull it out as soon as I've used it, and I can wipe it off. Just pull out all the internal components, wipe it off, add a little bit of lubricant to make sure you're, you know, keeping that operational, slap it back together, and you can use it for who knows how long, long period of time before it actually has any problems. So you have to decide kind of what you want to do. If you don't know, just fall back to the user's manual.
Yep, there you go.
That's the most important thing you can do. Anything else you got to add, John?
That's it.
That's pretty much it for me, man. I mean,
maintenance is not complicated. Don't overcomplicate it.
If the product that you're thinking about buying has some super high whiz bang, awesome Navy SEAL jumping out of the back of a freaking C-130 halo jumping or diving in the ocean, or some picture of some dude in a jungle or whatever, like, that's really cool and sexy. But if that's not you, then you need to ask yourself, why is this company trying to sell me this product using this method instead of saying, hey, by the way, we put 100,000 rounds through a gun using only our lubricant every 1,000 rounds and under all types of different conditions and with all different types of ammo, and the gun still ran.
Sold.
That's the product I want.
I bought it.
Bingo.
So I don't really care about what pictures they use.
Unless it's a picture of Glenn Stilson.
Yeah, in which case you should buy every weapon. Oh, yeah. Picture of me lubricating my product is NSFW, buddy.
Gross.
Kaboom.
All right. Lubricating your products.
All right. So next week.
Yes.
Well, technically next
week. This is actually 2 weeks from now. We're going to say next week, but it's actually
because
2 weeks
from
now.
Because this is going to be aired a week from now, which is actually today.
No, wrong.
Yes.
Yes, correct. Yes. Okay. So next week from this show, all right? From this show 1 week from now, we're going to be live again. And we're going to have a guest. We're going to have a guest in the studio with us. And I'm really excited about this show. Very excited. Because it's a topic we talked about a little bit a few months ago. And then this listener emailed us and was like, hey, here's some things you should also consider. And then I said, why don't you just come on the show and talk about that? And he was happy to oblige. So Josh is going to come on the show. Josh is he works in an organization. We'll say, I'll let him reveal as much as he wants to, but he works in an organization where digital security is a really important thing. All right. And so he's going to come on the show. This guy, one of our listeners, we've never had him on the show before. But he's going to come on and he's going to talk to us about digital security in an internet-driven world and how our phones, our tablets, our computers, everything can potentially compromise our security and can compromise things like even sometimes our ability to be free and continue to do things that we want to do. So I'm looking forward to that show. It's going to be really, really interesting.
Exciting.
Make sure you check us out on Facebook under The Arms Room. Make sure you check out Independence Training, the same. And until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.